Ever feel like there's a better way to build? So do we. I'm Matt, and welcome to the Mindful Builder podcast, where we believe in education through storytelling. Join me and my co-host Hamish as we both have a passion for building better, breaking barriers, and sharing our experience within the building industry. We're not pretending to know it all. In fact, we're learning right alongside you. Join us each week as we tackle complex topics like building science and mental well-being, inviting the brightest minds to connect curiosity with expertise. We want this to be a real conversation, encouraging vulnerability through honest discussions. So if you love this podcast and you're ready to join in, learn and build better, please do us a favor and subscribe wherever listening. It's the best way to make sure you never miss an episode, plus it really helps us out. And if you're feeling extra generous, a 5-star rating and a quick review would be amazing. Your support helps us reach new listeners and even better, allows us to book incredible guests for the future episodes. Thank you so much for being part of our community. We truly appreciate you. And now on to this week's episode. For reference, Sarah is one of my clients, but you're also my mortgage broker. And Beyond Financial is the company that you work for, which is yourself.
Yes.
So the reason why we wanted to get you in today is I think money's a huge conversation on what we have in the way we build. It's probably one of the hottest topics we have. And especially with interest rates and all these other questions, like we're not, like this isn't financial advice, just FYI.
Oh yeah, just massive disclaimer.
Yeah, massive disclaimer, this episode. But we don't know enough about it. And I can say that Sarah, with my house, there's so many things with green loans and construction loans that we just wanted to provide some information to people out there on
how to get money.
Yeah, how to get money, because reality is building's expensive and you need it. But Sarah also lives in a certified passive house. So we might touch on that right at the end quickly. But my first question to you, Sarah, welcome.
we're so professional.
So many people still default to walking into their local bank branch when seeking a home loan. And from your personal perspective, what are the disadvantages of this?
Take it way back, right? Like we have so many banks in Australia, and people probably, majority of people only knows the top four, which is your big four, right? Yeah. Which is your NAB, your Westpac, your ANZ and your CBA. Nothing wrong with them. But what you don't know is that there's actually probably 100 little banks out there, and home loans are regulated, compliance checked exactly the same way. And so it's worthwhile exploring all those other options, just like any purchase you ever make. I see it as, you know, if you're getting a mortgage, you should look the market. And it's difficult for one person as a borrower to look at every single bank in the market. Let's say there's 100. Like, you're not going to go to 100 banks and go, hey, what can you do for me? How much can I borrow? What's your rate? What's your fees? Like, that's just really, really time exhausting and probably mentally exhausting. So that's why people do that. They just go to what they know.
And they think they're getting a better rate though.
And they think that they're getting the best that they can because they think that, hey, I'm a loyal customer and you're going to do right by me. It's the opportunity cost. What they're missing out on is all these other banks. Like there's new banks starting up all the time. And when they do, they have promotions and they have offers. And so they're missing out on all these other options that they could, it could put them in a better position.
If a small bank just came onto the scene, was offering these like killer interest rates on their home loan, what happens if that bank folds?
I mean, we're going to like the big economy world and, you know, lots of compliance and auditing and government regulations and things, but it takes a lot for a bank to fold. You know, so thinking back for, you know, economic stability, the government will step in and do everything that can, you know, for a bank to fold. Like it's not like a normal business where, right, oh no, I'm not operating, I'll just fold. Like for a bank to fold, it's a really bad negative sign to the market.
They also run it. Aren't they like one of the most profitable?
You can say that. You know, they are very profitable.
My favourite with interest rates at the moment is like when they go down, they take a month to introduce a new rate. But when they go up, it's next
like
week.
Tomorrow.
Like personally, I want the bank that I'm got my home loan with to be profitable. Like I want them to be profitable.
Yeah.
But I think the misconception that people have is like, one, it's like, as you said, it's you doing all the work. There's so many options out there, but there's just loans out there that no one knows about. So, and we can use I'm happy to talk about my own loan. Like we're with Australia Bank and we were able to get, was it 0.5% 0.5% off our loan because
probably
I was
more. You've got the best rate out there at the moment.
Yeah, so because I'm building a passive house.
Yeah, well, okay.
So there are, with green loans are coming in, they're huge overseas, but I think most people aren't going to know this because Australia Bank don't have a branch. So you're going to walk into your CBA and let's be honest, like they're not looking after you. They just want your loan.
Yes. Like I don't want to say bad things about any banks, you know, and all that. But how a bank works is literally they take someone's deposit, right? So you, if you have some money to put it into the bank account, they take that deposit and then they on-lend that onto someone else. And then in between the interest margins, right? So you give me $50,000 to put in the bank account as a deposit, I pay you, let's say, 3% interest rate, but then I use that money and I lend it out to someone else and I charge them 6% interest rate. So that margin difference, that's what a bank does. That's how they make their money, right? So if you think about that in the aspect of things, that there is a business and they're there to make a profit. So if you're going in there as a bank to borrow money, they're going to try to charge you as high interest rate as possible because that's how they make their money,
yep.
Right? And they're going to try to give as low interest rate as possible to the depositors because that's their spending, that's their expense.
And the crazy thing to me is most people don't shop around every few years. They just sit with the one bank because, oh, they've given me a good deal. They don't call up, get on the phone and be like, hey, what can you do? Can you better the rate? They're not, the bank is not going to call you be like, hey Matt, we've got a better rate for you.
Because they're cutting their own income if they do that, right? So you want to treat your mortgage just as the same as you treat your insurance policies or your telco, you know, who your mobile phone with or who your health insurance with. Like you want to do your checks and reviews quite frequently.
How frequent?
I usually talk to my clients literally every 6 months.
Right.
And go,
okay.
What's going on? How are you going? How do you feel about your loan?
And she does. I can tell you, she does. By the way,
So we recently moved from one house in Morondike to another. We're coming up to 2 years and haven't reviewed that loan since. Like, are you saying?
I would say, it's a good time to have a look. Generally speaking, a home loan really only lasts for 2 years in Australia. People will refinance because you'll find a better rate, it'll put you in a better position. Not that
Write a note down.
There is a bit of work there, right? And there's a bit of cost to it. But we want to know that what you've got is that competitive in the market. And if we can find a better rate or better fees or giving you more borrowing capacity that you want. Is that going to put you in a better position? And you weigh your pros and cons, right? Yeah. The cost of doing it, is that going to outweigh the benefits? Then maybe let's stay for another 6 months.
Yeah.
But if it's going to put you in a better position, get you what you want, and it clearly saves you some interest, then, you know, it doesn't take long. It probably 2 weeks and you can get a new home
loan. But what does a mortgage broker cost me?
Generally speaking, in the overall market, doesn't cost you a cent. There is no out-of-pocket cost to engage a mortgage broker. How a mortgage broker gets paid is they work for you as the borrower. Just like a bank teller works for the bank, the mortgage broker works for you as the borrower. The job of a mortgage broker, to me anyway, is to go out there to talk to my clients and say, what is it that you want from your home loan? And
cheap.
You might go, yes, you know, generally 99% of the time, you know, lowest rates is always number one.
Yeah.
You know, lowest rates, no fees. You know, I want to have online access. I want to have my access to my savings whenever I want. You know, all these different what I call goals and objectives. On top of that, you might go, actually, I'm looking for another $300,000 because I want to extend my home or I want to rebuild this or I'll do that. How do I even do that? Where does that come from? So I gather all those bits of goals and objectives and my job is to literally look in the entire market. I can give you the entire 100%, you know, let's say there's 100 banks out there and give you 100 banks and what their responses are to what your needs are, but I will rank them and I will give you the top five. Because I'm not going to give you 100 options. You're not going to look at them.
And do you do that, all of that manually? Like you're going through 100 banks?
No.
Or you kind of have your finger on the pulse?
Correct.
So it's based off the information that I'm giving you, you're like, oh, you know what, these six banks over here are probably going to be the best.
Yeah.
And then you're going to rank them.
Yeah. So my job is to know intimately how each bank works. You think you go to a bank and you think you're getting the same home loan, but you're not. They have, every bank has a different credit policy, different appetite. They will issue interest rates based on their appetite, which is, you know, whether I want a construction loan or not.
Let's just, you've said a keyword, home loans. Can we differentiate between home loan and construction loan?
There is no difference in that the underlying product is a home loan. A home loan is literally a mortgage against a property for you to do, you know, various purposes, right? So the various purposes might be you get a home loan to buy a property, you get a home loan to refinance, you get a home loan to buy an investment property, or you get a home loan to build on it. And they just call that particular home loan type a construction loan. But it is a different product. But the overall, the basis of that loan is the same, is that they put a mortgage against your home, they lend you a certain amount of money, and then you repay it.
And they release it at certain stages with the construction loan.
Yeah, so a construction loan is a different product, right? Just like an offset account is a different product, or interest only is a different product. A construction loan is a different product. It's some banks, not all banks offer construction loans. So some banks will offer construction loans where they'll go, all right, we will give you a certain portion of money for you to build your house. Whether that's a,
so it's like a line of credit.
Rebuild. Similar, but it's restrictive, right? Line of credits are generally for businesses that are a bit more flexible and versatile. You can draw money out whenever you want, put money in whenever you want. There's restrictions on that construction loan where they'll go, okay, we will approve you of a certain amount based on the
stage,
build contract.
The stage, yep.
So if your build contract, let's say the overall build is $1 million, how much can you afford in terms of services? Well, the industry jargon is serviceability, so what your income and expenses allow you to afford the loan. And then they'll say, all right, we'll give you 80% of that, let's say. And that 80%, so that's $800,000. A construction loan means that they will only release portions out of that loan to the builder after various checks.
And,
right?
And correct me if I'm wrong, the client's money will come out first.
Yes.
So say if they've got $200,000, they'll finance the first $200,000 worth of payments, and that's when the bank kicks in.
Correct. Yep. Generally, you need to put your deposit in first.
Yep.
So whatever your contribution part is first. But it goes through the progress payments, and, you know, we do it for you.
Yeah.
So for example, you send us an invoice, the builder sends us an invoice and say, hey, we've completed this stage. There'll be checks to make sure that you have.
Yeah, the bank will come out and inspect it, which is okay.
Correct. There might be an inspection. There might be some sort of verification that you've actually done what you said you've done.
Mm-hmm.
And then once that's verified and it's approved, then the bank will then release that money and it goes directly to the builder. It doesn't go to the borrower because, well, sometimes we don't trust that.
Yeah, all of a sudden they've got a new boat.
So I've literally, just before we, you know, got onto this conversation, I was trying to get onto the inspection of the bank.
Herentod
to come out and inspect that stage of the project. I don't know if you can answer this or not, but we only get that on some projects.
Yes.
So what are the criteria for banks to want to come out and inspect stages?
It really comes back to the bank's policy.
Okay.
So every, like I said, every bank has its own unique credit policy for every type of loan, for every type of product.
Yeah.
So some banks might go, all right, it's under a certain amount, right, of lending. They're happy to take the risk that, you said you've done what you've done. We're happy to just pay it.
Yeah.
Over a certain amount or a certain area or location or a certain type of build, or there's all sorts of different checks that the banks want, and that's what triggers it. So that they might go, oh, for this project, no, our policy says we want someone out there every single time.
I don't know if you've experienced this, but I've found that the more progress claims that we have, so say if we've got, I don't know, so a normal progress claim is what, six stages or something?
Yeah, so it's, and this was my next point.
We'd usually have 10 to 12,
mm-hmm.
and it's usually in line with smaller chunks.
Yes.
And sometimes our progress claims are a little bit us about to how they're normally
Yes.
Yeah, man, and you would have experienced.
But it's better. You have small amounts. It makes more sense from the client because they are not upfronting huge amounts. And if something's going wrong with the builder, they can pull it a lot quicker.
I guess the point I'm trying to make is I would say most of our listeners are probably going to be in the situation where the bank is coming out to inspect because yes. there's more progress claims and they're unusual claims. So I might yes. have external building wrap and yep. external service penetrations. That's
yeah.
a claim
yeah.
for me.
Yeah, same. Yes.
Where they're just like, what is this
yeah.
mean?
Yeah.
A lot of them won't even know you have your standard building contract, yep. right? It's a template, yep. right? Issued by HIA or whatever yep. Yep. the society is.
Yep.
And they will have a specific list of, yep. you know, whether
their
it's...
Their default.
Yeah,
it's industry standard.
Yeah, correct. Your deposit, your slab, your frame, your...
lockup, your fix, your final.
Base frame lockup.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And specifically do not work in high performance and passive house construction. They are, it's the biggest mistake on the first one I did, I ran with the industry standard payments fucked me hard.
Cash flow. Fucked.
There's just so many variables for a bank, right? For you to choose the right bank to work with you, especially on a construction project. First of all, not all banks do construction. So then you've got to weed them all out. And then out of the banks that does construction, do they do, you know, fixed price building contract or do they do cost plus plus? Building yep. contracts. You've got to weed those out depending on what you've
got. Owner builders.
Weed those out and you know, work out. And then it gets to that. So some banks will be absolutely rigid and go, we will not go beyond those standard progress payments.
We had one at the start of the year. They would not budge.
No.
And they were one of the big four banks. Were not interested in budging on any of those stage payments
yeah.
at all. And I was like, well, we can go back to that, but I've got to now change your contract
yeah.
because it's designed to make it more cost effective for you guys. And it's going to add a huge amount of money because I now need to fund more of the yeah. project up front.
Yeah.
So they changed it and another bank was like, this is easy. Like this yeah. is just done.
So you got to find the banks that is willing to work with all the parties, right? And completely understand builders having more frequent progress payments because it helps your cash flow. It helps you run the project more smoothly. But on the bank side, some banks are just not willing to change or work outside of that policy.
Surely anyone can see that more frequent payments equals a better run business
and less risk on the bank.
And
wouldn't
less
it make
risk on the bank?
Can't sort of comment on the risk on the bank side, but from a bank's perspective, unfortunately they have a policy.
Yeah, okay.
So that's stick to that policy yeah. or you yeah. go outside of that policy.
Yeah, okay.
And if they're not willing to go outside of that policy, then my job as a mortgage broker is to find the lender who's willing to
yep.
do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, right. yeah, because for me, the risk thing makes sense in the sense of like if you 35% of your payment is for a builder, if that's $1 million project, that's a lot of money. It's like, woohoo, I've got 350K in my bank account out of nowhere. I've paid a few of the trades. Let's go buy a boat, a jet ski like yeah. typical tradie does. From a bank's perspective, wouldn't they be better releasing smaller increment amounts along the way to get their checks and balances? So if they say, oh, twice we've gone on site now and they haven't done what they're told, yellow flag, let's maybe look yeah. into this a bit more, especially in an environment where over the last few years, how many builders have gone under?
Like, yeah.
It only makes sense.
Yeah.
But
it is a lot of paperwork and a lot of processing, right, for the bank.
What's your top three tips to look for in a bank or a loan provider? And I know it's a bit of a how long's a piece of string question because everyone's situation's different and yeah. everyone's financial and work situation's different and every construction project is different.
Yeah. I suppose if you're someone who's just going to your own bank, my tip is do they tick all the boxes that you're looking for in your loan?
Yeah.
Right? Because everyone's goals and objectives are different for their loan. Some people, believe it or not, might not care about the rate, but they absolutely want, you know, 24-hour service. I want a branch that I need to get into.
Yep.
I want online apps or something, or I want, I might work internationally. I want an international, presence and things like that. So whatever you want out of your loan, and make sure that the banks you're going to ticks those boxes. Like I would, what I do is I physically write them down. All right, you know, for Matt, this is what you want. Does that bank tick those boxes?
One of them was ethical banking for me. I didn't want someone who's investing in things like guns and
yeah.
But like that to me. So really, we start to limit it.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So the more criteria you have, the more limited the bank options there are, right? Yeah. But having said that, there's going to be always a lender for you. There should be.
Mm. Yeah.
Depending on what you want to pay. It's never a no, right? Yeah. It's always, all right, well, based on what you want, these are the options. Are you happy with those options? If you're not happy with those options and you want to open more doors, then we might have to, I guess, sacrifice a few of those criteria and goals.
And my case was hard because I'm a builder, but I get treated like an owner builder, but then I wanted an ethical bank.
Correct.
Like, so we were very limited very quickly. Yeah, okay. And I wanted different stage payments. So,
I mean, you've obviously gone with Australia Bank. What other banks were an option for you?
I think ANZ was maybe one of them. I can't even remember. I originally asked for Australia Bank or I think Bendigo Bank because that's who I currently bank with for business.
Because they're quite ethical as well, in they're customer friendly.
I didn't want Big Four.
Social, they're really socially connected as well.
Yep.
And there's branches everywhere for Bendigo.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, they're very
community-based
bank. Yep. They're not a, you know, like your Big Four banks.
Yeah, Bendigo
or
Bank,
banks.
If you want to sponsor.
Yeah, Australia Bank. Like, you guys have endless bank accounts.
They are good.
I also bank with Bendigo for my business. So.
but like, and because the other thing, like, yeah, so we had a very hard time, and that's why I want to touch on owner builders for a second is, owner builders, like one, signing off work and you hold the same responsibility as a builder for the entirety of the build, the 10 years you sign off on it. You don't have the insurance as we do. Two, when you go to loan, it's practically impossible these days.
Yeah, not many people will do it. I don't know why. It's like they don't trust you to build your own home. And I'm like, dude, that's the home that they're going to build the best on. It's their own home.
But they might sell it a lot of the time, and owner builders are the ones that cut a lot of corners.
I've actually got I know someone at the moment who's struggling to get an owner builder loan. Who are the, well, other than coming to see you, what's their?
Or a mortgage broker.
Mortgage broker.
Yep. Like they just have to, you just have to shop around. Yeah. Right. Really shop around because a lot of banks don't like owner builders. You know, they do a lot of background checks on you, look at your, you know, previous projects and things, look at your builder's license, and they also limit how much you can borrow.
Right. Okay.
So it's not like they're going to go, oh, yep, we'll just give you whatever you need. You know, you need to put skin in the game.
An owner builder would get less if they wanted to run their own project versus if they got a builder to contract.
Another builder, yeah.
And just for you get treated because you're a licensed builder, you get treated as an owner builder, just FYI.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, because you're still building your own home.
Yeah.
So there's that sort of arm's length.
There's probably not separation. As much. I would say they're probably not as lenient, but the conversation is probably a bit easier because we can justify costings really quickly with our tools and we can spit out where an owner builder's like, oh, I think it's going to cost this, but we haven't got anything quoted.
Most likely, definitely need a fixed price building contract.
And what's ironic, I had to sign a contract with Carlin for Constructions for Matthew Carlin. So both of us signed the same contract.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's
all about mitigating risk.
I don't know. Right? I'm not going to sue myself.
How is that mitigating risk?
Well,
that doesn't make any sense.
the bank is only going to give you what you said you're going to cost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it, right?
And we're bang on.
Matt brought up something before, a terminology before, LVR.
Loan to value ratio.
Yeah, yeah. Do you just want to explain what that is?
Essentially LVR stands for loan to value ratio.
Yeah.
And it's a percentage, right?
Yeah.
So in the simplest terms, it's what your loan amount is compared to the value of the property. And I'll come back to that for construction loans because it's very different. So let's say you want to go buy a house. You went to an auction or you bought a house and you bought it for $1.5 million.
Yep.
You want a loan against that. You know, let's say it's 80% that you want, right? So that's a 1.2 that you want.
You want to borrow 1.2 to buy the home, yep.
To buy a $1.5 million house.
Yep.
So what the bank will do is send out a, third-party valuer. So it's non-biased or anything. It's completely, you know, random selection of valuers. They go out there and they value the property. That may or may not come in at the 1.5 mark that you just bought it at.
Okay.
That's the risk. yep. right? Generally speaking, under $2 million, generally it will come in at that price.
Okay.
That's market rate, isn't it? Like if you pay 1.5,
isn't it? Not really, because sometimes, especially at auctions, you might go a bit emotional and yep. I really want that.
Daddy starts bidding for the daughter. Yeah. It's like, oh, my daughter's not going to get this. That's going to be us in.
So, generally speaking, you're going to come in at purchase price. But there yep. may be some issues that where it's not, because a valuation of a property is it looks at the surrounding areas of that okay. of where you've bought or where you are, and they look at the last 6 months of activity there, what's been sold. If you have a distressed sale down your street that people have let it go for a really, really low price, then that might hurt your valuation.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
But there are comparables, right? They might go, oh, no, that place, you know, you've just done a renovation, so this is a superior fit out versus an inferior old 30-year-old house.
So do they exclude the outliers or not? Or they put it all in?
Yes and no. They put it all in there. It's yeah. a massive formula that the valuers do, and they spit out a valuation.
Yeah.
And so let's say it comes in at $1.5 million because that's mm-hmm. what you bought it for. Then, sweet, you're good. Your LVR is 80%. Because you want $1.2 million, you actually bought for $1.5 million and the valuation came in at $1.5 million.
Yeah.
Where it gets tricky is that let's say you bought for $1.5 million, but the valuer goes out there and go, it's actually smaller land or whatever, comparables. It's only worth $1.4 million.
Yeah.
The bank will then lend you, let's say, back to 80% of the $1.4 million. Not of the 1.5.
So you've got to find the extra cash.
Yeah.
Correct. So you have two options. You either forego that purchase. Hopefully you've got a finance clause in that contract.
Yeah.
Please.
That's only if you negotiate. You can't do that at auction.
Correct.
I was just going to say that you can't do that at auction.
Correct. But get legal advice. That's what your conveyance is very, very important. You're coming to auction
with a 10% check.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can get out of that and you go, I cannot get finance for this purchase because the valuation is coming low. So you can get out of that, or you stump up the difference yourself.
Well, can't you get the insurance, what do they call it? That lending insurance?
LMI?
Yeah.
But it will still...
You've got to fund that.
Yes and no, but you'll fund that. Yeah. And the bank then at this stage will only see that property as 1.4. They'll forget about the 1.5. They're like, it's not worth it. Unless you dispute it. You can try to dispute with the valuer, but that's kind of never won.
Or just, or what most people do is go to the bank and mum and dad.
Maybe I'm speaking out of line here, but it just, and not everyone's in a fortunate position to be able to do this, but it just seems bonkers to me. If your loan is 80% of the value of the home, like that scares the shit out of me.
Doesn't it scare me?
Oh, I don't know. That just...
That's a lot?
Yeah. It scares the shit out of me. I mean...
I've got no idea.
Generally, it will be at that level, if not more. Yeah.
Okay. I reckon I've ran some at 90 before. Yeah.
The highest you can borrow is actually 98%.
And who are they lending that kind of money to?
For someone with very little deposit that wants to buy.
But that obviously have a good paying job, though, to get it across the line.
So it's a different thing. Like to get a loan, there's three things that you absolutely the bank looks at, right? Your income expenses, so how much you earn and how much you spend, and therefore what's left over as a surplus that can allow you to make loan repayments. That's called serviceability.
Yep.
And then the equity side, so how much contribution you can put in yourself versus how much you can borrow up to that. And then also the third thing is the property itself. Does the bank want that property?
I understand it from an investment point of view. Like that makes total sense to me. From a personal home point of view,
it's all risk. Yeah. It's how much risk you want to take. So, but like I'm assuming if I had $1.4 million in my bank account, I could probably borrow the 98% if the home's worth 94. $1.4 million. Like the more that you have saved, wouldn't that?
Not necessarily, because how much you can borrow is depending on your income.
Yeah.
So just because you've got a lot of money saved. But you're not working or you don't have an income, then technically you can't borrow anything.
Yeah.
So how much you have saved is the equity part versus the income expenses part is different. So the bank checks at everything.
So you're talking about equity, but an equity can also exist elsewhere as well.
Correct. Right? It doesn't have to be cash.
Yeah. Cryptocurrency. How's that one gone?
I don't know. I haven't had that one before. But you could use... another property.
Yep.
If you've got other properties that you can chip in, you could use the bank of mum and dad. That's equity.
Yeah. So so I think I know the answer to this. But so say I've got another property over here and I might have $500,000 worth of equity in that one.
Yep.
How does that work if I don't have the cash to make up the difference? How does that scenario work?
Yeah. So I put then two properties together into the pool.
Yep.
So the bank looks at both properties. Mm-hmm. Let's say you've got $1 million here in one property and you're buying 1.5, like the example before. So all of a sudden you've got $2.5 million of property that they can leverage up against.
Yep.
So you've got equity.
And then what does the bank do to this other property over here?
They'll take another mortgage.
Another mortgage, so two separate mortgages?
Yes.
Yep. Okay. Yep.
A mortgage is on one property only, sort of thing. So you have a mortgage over one property and then another mortgage over the other property.
Yep.
But it's all part of your assets in to leverage against.
Yeah.
But going back to the LVR, it's a little bit different for construction loans, right? Because at the start of the project, your property might be worth only just the land.
Yeah.
It might be a vacant block of land. And then you go through the whole process of designing a house, getting the builder's quote, contract and all that. And what the bank does is the bank then goes and does a valuation based on the drawings and the plans built, that you brought, and they give you two amounts. So they'll give you a valuation of what it is as is now. So if it's a house that you're going to knock down and rebuild, then it's whatever the house that's on there now and the land. And then they look at the drawings and what you're going to do on that property, and then they give you another valuation called on completion, which is what they think that's going to be worth once it's all built, according to those specs.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay. And so for a construction loan, it's what you're borrowing in that future value.
Yes. Yep.
So it's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Because you might be knocking down a really crappy old house that's probably only worth $200,000 and the land's worth, $600,000, and you're knocking away the $200,000 old house, but you're going to build another $1 million house on it that's beautiful, and all of a sudden your future valuation is,
1.5, 1.5.
Yeah. Maybe more. You hope that it's
more.
Hope
it's more, yeah. Yep.
Never include landscaping because I've never seen a landscaping. I'm sorry, landscapers.
But
landscaping really add that much value.
Yeah, so I was going to ask that too because I have had some banks want the landscaping plans as well.
Yeah, that you can definitely put into it.
Yeah.
It might add a few bit of value. But it's never going to be as much as you think what you're going to put
in. And ironically, so a lot of the time we're not including solar panels and batteries in our pricing.
Yes.
But we're obviously running all the conduits and stuff for it or pre-wiring it. But the bank is still wanting to know.
Correct, how much that's
going to be. How much it's going to be because that probably has more of an impact than your landscaping.
And that ties in nicely to green loans.
Yes, so absolutely. So all those other things that you're putting on.
I hate the term green loan, by the way. I hate it.
But what else are you going to call it? Like, it's just such a –
I don't know, but it's
– sustainability loans, just the industry we live in is buzzwords, and it's just another way the banks feel better.
But anyway, carry on. We digress.
So you will want to add all those bits and pieces into it to add value to that property in the end.
Yeah.
And then you can therefore borrow more against that future value.
And what is the bank looking for when they're doing that assessment? So we have this example at the moment, project under construction. They ended up going through Bank Australia, and Bank Australia were a little bit more lenient because they looked at, I think this is not a passive house, but it's sitting in PHI Low Energy territory and it's getting a really high star rating as well. I think it's high eights or maybe even low nines. Wow. So really, it's a really high performing property.
Yep.
But there's only two people living in it.
Yep.
And it's only a three-bedroom home, but the bank's like, oh, maybe you could put a fourth bedroom in. So they're actually suggesting, which I find ridiculous.
Spend more money.
That's a little bit.
So it was a really odd scenario.
That's an odd.
Yeah, like,
They've seen the plans, right?
Yeah,
they've seen the drawings.
Yeah,
they know what you're building.
Yeah. So it's like it seemed really odd that they're suggesting, well, if you had another bedroom – it wouldn't be an issue.
So I just want to make it clear, take a step back. It's not the bank that does the valuation.
Sorry,
it's the valuer that does the valuation.
The valuer, yes.
The valuer is a different entity to the bank.
Yes.
And it's the bank can't influence the valuer anyway. because they're non-biased. Yep. You know, the valuers are picked in a random pool. So what the valuer is saying there, I'm just trying to guess, is that, hey, you can probably get a better valuation by adding in another bedroom.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly
what so why would they say that? Are we having difficulties with the LVR? Like, are we saying the valuation is not high enough?
So, I mean, I don't want to go into too much detail, but at the end of the day, it just seemed interesting to me that, you know, in a world where, or in a current market where sustainability is huge, you know, I'm really trying to convince clients just to build what they need.
Yep.
Because of construction prices being where they are, and but just also heating and cooling these places and sustainability in general. That
white elephants that's out there. Imagine the heating of.
But then you've just got you've got you know, real estate agents and potential future buyers in mind, where I'm like, well, if this is going to be the home that you're going to be in for the next 10, 15, 20 years, none of that matters.
Correct.
And you just need to look at what you're doing. It just seems ironic that they're disconnected with the valuation of
correct.
The property. That's just my roundabout way of kind of looping that the relevance of that back
in. So unfortunately, valuations, real estate agents and future sales market, that's still quite old school, right, in that the more bedrooms you have, the more it's going to be valued at. You know, it's going to take a lot to change that mindset.
Do you think it's changing?
Yes and no, because it's a market movement, right?
Yeah.
So with one house that's really efficient, you can't say one house that's really efficient on the street, that's not going to change the value of that house if no one else has changed on that, you know, on that street, right? Because a valuation looks at your particular property based on the surrounding areas and what's happened in the last recent months. But if, let's say, there's four houses on the street that is sustained, you know, highly performance and efficient, then that might change the overall valuation of that property.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like a market sort of infiltration. That makes sense.
And what I'm about to ask you now is more of your opinion, because it is relevant to this conversation. You've recently renovated an old merchant building, so a volume builder home, and you've decided to invest, I'd say, a good amount of money in turning this into a passive house.
Certified. So we don't get picked apart by the association. Certified. It is a certified passive house.
Certified passive house. Now, I don't want to go into how you finance it or paid for it, because it's kind of irrelevant. We're moving into a market now where these projects need to become more frequent.
Yep.
How are the banks looking at these kinds of projects versus how they used to look at them before? Like, because obviously it costs a bit more to do what you've done, and I've got three projects at the moment, very similar design team and consultant team as who you had.
Yep.
And my clients are incredibly motivated, and we haven't got to the point with how much has been financed, how much has been cash injected.
Yep.
But I'm curious to know, as we move into this kind of phase where more of these buildings are going to become more popular, as in people are renovating their existing home, not extending, upgrading the thermal performance, how are the banks looking at those projects, in your opinion?
To be brutally honest, and I'm really sorry for the banks,
they don't give a fuck, do they?
They do not.
Yeah.
They do not. All right? They absolutely do not.
Australia Bank do.
So there's the banks that are subscribing to green sustainability and efficiency. They will create policies, a credit policy, which is what the underlying sort of ethos of every home loan. They will create credit policies that will benefit sustainability and efficiency.
Yeah.
So, for example, Bank Australia is one of those banks where they are absolutely the forefront of green loans. You know, they will reward you for having a high rating star with very low interest rates for the 5 years. They will give you higher borrowing capacities, LVRs and things, in order to help you to you know, build that home. But generally speaking, green loans aren't the majority of the home loan market.
Yeah.
So you really need to there's clever ways to restructure your finance, right? To look at your entire portfolio of assets and liabilities and go, what is my absolute borrowing capacity? Work that out and structure ways with other assets and that you've got to get what to get the funding that you need. Yeah.
Do you, and I guess it's one of the reasons I'm asking this is because I'm thinking about one of these projects in particular where we might spend 6 months on this project and you might look at it at day one and then you might look at it in 6 months' time and you'll look at the home and it will look almost identical
yep.
to what it was before.
Yeah.
However, I'm stripping the roof off, I'm stripping yep. the cladding off, I'm putting new windows in, I'm putting really good membranes on, I'm insulating it really well.
Yeah.
So the living experience is going to be wildly different, but from the street view,
yeah.
it's going to almost look the same.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm just trying to understand how are the banks valuing so these things?
Again, it's the valuer that's valuing it, okay. not the bank.
Sorry. How yeah. is the valuer valuing these things?
The valuer, you absolutely need to request them to go inside and have a look.
Yep. Yeah. But if we're talking about something that's not seen, how is the value so, of valuing?
But you've got to feed them information. If you don't tell them,
correct. Okay. You feed them all
do
that
you
information.
You kind of understand where
you know, 100%.
You get where
and
I'm going.
And this is really
going
to be a bit of a 360. We talk about getting your design team, your energy consultant, your interior designer, your builder together at the start of a project. Get your mortgage broker in
wow,
instantly
okay.
from the start. Yeah. And I say it to all my clients, engage someone. Because
well, see, the first thing we ask in our application form is, is this cash or finance, or is it a combination?
What do you find?
Like
anything over the age of 60 is just cash.
Yeah, so there are some who are cash, but I would say majority are taking out some kind of loan.
Some kind of loan.
But we're looking yep. at all the metrics that we're asking,
yep.
the questions we're asking, and
yep.
I won't go into that in too much detail.
Yeah,
if people want to know, they can go onto our website and find out. But
www.carlinconstructions.com
or yoursanctum.com/contact. But like so finance and loans do come into it. So it is interesting that you say, Matt,
yeah.
bring your mortgage broker in.
They're part of the team.
Because we want to know, like, cause we don't want to know that they're financing it at the end of the costing because we want to know that they've got funds to complete.
Yeah, what if they go, oh, we've designed this, but we can't afford it.
Yeah.
Correct. So I see that. So I do a lot of commercial builds as well. Funding for that, and we're talking $6 million big, massive builds. And I get that a lot where people are very enthusiastic. They look at the specs and they go, I want to design this massive commercial building. It's going to have this and this and that and get the architects involved and get a cost and get a feasibility report and all that sort of spend a lot of money doing all of that. And then at the end of it, the builders come in and says, this is going to, how much is going to cost me? It's going to cost you about $4 million to build. And then all of a sudden they go, oh, I don't have that money. Mm. Well, how am I supposed to fund this?
Yeah.
So you've sort of wasted time, energy and, deposits and things on a dream that can't be done yet.
So the absolute best thing is,
literally, if you're thinking about a project that's building, get your finance sorted first.
100%. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But it's
other way around. Yeah. You can, imagine someone that comes to you and says, hey, I want to do this, but I literally, my max is this. Yeah. What can you do for me at this level?
We actually have in our questionnaire, what is the number that scares you? So we, generally speaking, we have a pretty good understanding of where the project will fall over. And Dan's really good at asking these questions straight up, going, how are you funding
it? I've got no doubt he is.
Oh, he's very good at doing it. And I think honesty in all of these things is the best.
Absolutely. You got to be open and honest. And I know money is very sensitive, right? Like,
especially different cultures can be very different.
Different cultures are different. It's sensitive. Yeah. But it's not that I'm certainly not here laughing and you're going, oh, is that all you can afford? No, I'm working my ass off trying to get you that extra money to build the dream house that you want.
Right? I'm going to give you how important a mortgage broker is and the level of trust I had in Sarah. And I've never really leveraged this and I got to because Sarah became my mortgage broker halfway during her build. She got full access to everything I had. That's the level of trust you need to have in your mortgage broker.
Okay,
I am building her house.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she sees everything.
You could see up his skirt when he was building your...
Yeah,
yeah, okay.
That is the level of trust that you need to have.
Yep.
Like it's really, and I've got to leverage it because.
It is confronting, right? Like, having someone go through your finances is a confronting thing.
Yeah. And they weren't the greatest at the time. Like we've gone through 2-3 years of COVID. Like that's like, it's not, Like everyone sits here and thinks builders make billions of dollars.
You don't?
I haven't got my boat and jets.
I'm literally like people who works with money every day. I am here. I cannot say this enough to all of my clients. I'm not here to judge.
Yeah.
I am absolutely I'm absolutely here to you tell me what you want and I will work my ass off to try to get it for you.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you need to be open and honest and have a really sort of dynamic conversation about, all right, this might be your goals. Yeah. And I'll always start with utopia.
Yeah.
But this is actually where you are in terms of your affordability.
Yeah.
How do we judge that? Yeah.
And here's a question for you.
Can I jump in? Because I want to give a plug on Sarah too here, not just because she's here. We sat in this exact room when we were looking at your project, actually one of the other projects that's not going to site. And I originally had a mortgage broker and you had just given birth 3 or 4 days before to your second child.
Yes.
We're in the meeting here and I'm sitting here being like, Sarah, I'm taking notes. It's okay. You just chill. She's like, no, I'm working. Like that is her work ethic.
I think I signed loan documents with a client. I was still in hospital after giving birth 9:30 p.m. the night before. And I signed loan documents with a client over the phone in the hospital at 10 a.m.
In between contractions. Hang on, just 30 seconds.
So that's how much Sarah's going to fight for you to get that loan.
I will not let a loan fail.
I'm going to be
anyone listening is having questions, that is like her work ethic.
I want to
come back to how people can get in contact with you because I think it's really important and hopefully, you know, people will call you and you'll get loans for them. But how else can people get money? Because I know mum and dads are another thing, but I know that there are other markets where you can get money from.
Yeah. So there's all sorts of different lenders, right? Mm-hmm. To me, Bank of Mum and Dad is still a lend. You're just borrowing your future inheritance, really.
Yes. Yeah.
So to me, it's always just a lend, right? Yeah. It just depends on, and I say this to all my clients, it just depends on who is funding that lending, right? Yeah. To me, a bank is a bank is a bank. They're just a source of funds for you.
Yeah.
So there's different tiers of banks, right? There's your majors and your second tiers and your third tiers. There's if your financials are not, prepared on time or there's all sorts of other private lenders that you can tap into. It all comes down to there will be a lender that will able to help you fund your project. It comes down to what your circumstances are and whether you're able to accept those loan terms.
Yeah, because generally those say if your financials aren't great and you wanted X amount of dollars, there's always someone that will lend you that money, but it's probably at a higher interest rate.
Correct, because they're taking a more risk.
A minimum term at that rate that you fixed.
Yeah, but it's up to you, right? If your priority is to get this project off the ground and get it done, then you might be happy to wear that cost. Yeah. But it's not long-term cost. It's not like you're paying that for 30 years.
Yeah, a year and a half other projects on site.
I had a client where we were building a home, a pretty it was a different home, right? So I won't go into too much detail. But he ended up going and sourcing a portion out in the business market.
Yep.
And there was the home loan and then there was this loan over here, which is a higher interest rate.
Yep.
And his goal was at the end of it, just consolidate the loans.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely.
So once it's as built.
Yes. Correct. So it's never your higher rates or your private lenders or whatever, they know as well that you're only using them for that particular project.
Yeah.
Right. Once it's all done and I get that a lot, hey Sarah, I've got this nice block of land. I really want to build 4 townhouses on here. I've got no income, but I've got the land, and I want to build these 4 townhouses. Okay, really, your traditional funders are going to be looking at you, right? So we go to a private lender and we go, okay, based on that land value, I'm happy to give you the funding to build those 4 townhouses. You might go, all right, I'm going to sell 2 of them. At the end, so that might take you 18 months to build. You sell 2 of them, use that proceeds to then pay off that loan, refinance whatever's left over onto a traditional home loan.
Yeah.
So all those higher costs, really, you're not forced into it, but you need to justify in your mind, do I really want this project? If I want it, then I'm happy to pay for this cost and it's temporary and I know in the future I'm going to be in a better position to put those funds into a better rate.
Yeah, so there's a risk there. And you obviously factor those costs into the overall amount that you're paying to get those four townhouses built.
Yeah. I see my job is to, again, goes back to what are your goals and objectives? Based on your goals and objectives, I will give you the best, you know, top five lender options.
Yeah.
And I will tell you the pros and cons in each one of them. And then it's up to you to decide who you want to go with.
Yeah.
Now, some brokers might just recommend and go, this is what I think you should do. I don't feel comfortable doing that because I see my job is giving you options and you, the borrower, because you're the one signing on the dotted line.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You need to be comfortable with what you're signing. And you need to be able to sleep at night, and so do I.
Yes.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah. You know, it is money, right? And I definitely don't want to be putting you into a loan that you can't afford or you have mortgage stress. That doesn't make me feel better either.
Yeah.
So my job is to inform you, and help you, select the decision. Yeah.
You live in a passive house.
Yes.
What's it feel like? Where today it's been freezing. It's cold.
I don't know how to say it. It's like one of the – I literally don't want to go outside ever.
Do you know, it's funny, your inability to answer it is exactly what I really want to try and – I've been trying to capture this in marketing, in some kind of marketing campaign, because I can't put my finger on it because I've gone and stayed in my friends who we've built and it's a feeling, it's comfortable.
It's just less stress, and I know that things just tick along and work.
Yeah,
and they're working for the best of me, sort of thing, and my family, obviously. It's just like no hassle living.
And I want to just reiterate, this was a renovation.
Yes,
this wasn't a new build. It was a renovation because I think that there are a lot of people out there now with this dream of wanting to live in a passive house and them saying, well, I'm never going to be able to afford it. But, you know, your situation's – I'm not going to say it's unique. There are so many people throughout Victoria and Australia who are living in these shitty homes and they can live – they can have
– There's 9 million of them.
They absolutely can because – well, we didn't know we could do it, right, at the start.
It was a hypothesis. The whole idea of this project is like, can we turn an old volume builder house into a passive house? The answer is yes, because now Sarah lives in one.
Yeah.
And I remember when we first chatted, Matt, it was like, hey, Matt, do you want to take on this project? And Matt's first response was, well, you know, I'm only doing things that is cool and, you know.
And luckily I've got Shane who just goes down a rabbit hole and I was like
I just want to do things that's a challenge. No, I don't want to build normal houses and, you know, and we're like.
I can totally imagine Matt saying that.
I found the perfect clients because her partner Shane literally
has gone
down the biggest rabbit hole.
Yeah,
he loves it.
Oh, yeah.
And he will give you, you know, like 10 different options. Go, what about this? And what about that? And what about this? And Matt will just go, no.
Go to Sarah. When you need the questions and the answer, you go to Sarah. Yeah. When you want to push envelope, you go to Shane.
So it is absolutely doable.
Yeah.
I don't think, to be honest, it did cost a little bit more, but I didn't think it costed that much more that we go, oh, you know, we're not, yeah.
Because you've obviously seen, as someone who lends money for a living or procures or helps people procure loans for a living, you've obviously seen value in what you've done.
Yes, absolutely. Because from a money side, what we've done is converted something that, yes, you could absolutely live in when we bought it. It was a 30, 40-year-old house, you know, with 30 and 40-year-old decor. And, you know, you could absolutely just live in it.
I don't know if you could. That was
I saw pictures during
the It stank.
There was mold, there was everything, it was just awful.
Yeah. In fact, Drew said he walked in there. He said he had to leave.
Legit, this is a true story. Drew walks in like a sniffer dog and just like sniffed his way to a wall, ripped the plaster off the wall and go, see, I told you there's mold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was mold. I mean, like, yes, you could still live in it, right? Like absolutely, don't get me wrong, you could live in it. But what we've converted into is something that I literally do not want to go outside now.
Yeah.
Like it is just my favorite place in the world.
The interiors are beautiful. Like big props to Erin. You know, we do a lot of work with Erin, and what she's turned that into and obviously what Matt and his team have produced is incredible.
Yeah, and look, let's be completely honest about Erin and her hair and all that. At the very start when Matt talked about it and he's like, oh, who are you working with for interior? And we were like, I don't know, maybe her. And I think you introduced us to her hair or something. Or no, maybe Shane knew about it already.
I think Shane had already on his one of his side quests has already engaged her.
So I talked to Shane years ago.
That's how I got the client. That's how I got the link.
So it was all intertwined.
And I was like going, surely this is, and I'm being brutally honest, surely I could do the design myself. Like, how hard is it? I'll just look on Pinterest and just pick out the colours.
Just hang on a sec. Hey, Matt, surely I could go and get my own home loan myself. Surely it's that easy.
I'll pay 3% higher interest rate.
I can go and procure the best home loan.
Exactly, right?
Yeah,
And even at the very start, and I'm just like, I don't know if I need Erin. I don't know if I wasn't sold on the whole thing at all.
Yep.
And then we got to the engagement piece, the design piece and all that. And there's like literally I think I had 1,000 questions thrown at me. Well, what about this? What about this? What do you want this? What do you want? I'm like, I don't, what? So in come Erin, who gathered all of our, just like what I do for mortgage, gathered all of our goals and objectives and what we like and what we don't like. And was very high for her. So kudos to Erin, because Shane and I are polar opposites for what we like and what we don't like. Literally polar opposites. So she had to come and, you know, funnel everything and get to a middle ground and then sort of spit out this beautiful home that I just went, I love it.
There's your marketing, Erin.
I didn't have to answer 1,000 questions. Well, I sort of did, but in a way that was doable. And I didn't have decision fatigue, and it was nice to talk to Erin to go. She's like, "Oh, what do you think about this? And what do you think about that?" And
for every one question Sarah asked, it was 50 Shane questions.
Yeah, Shane found literally 12 toilets that he wanted to put in, 12 different types.
Oh my God.
Anyway, we've got to wrap this up. We're going to get them back on us. We should actually get both of them back on together.
Both of them. In fact, I reckon we should get Erin in as well and just ask her like how she managed to get to what she got.
Honestly, it's a really cool project. We've just actually lodged it to a sustainability awards. I don't even know if I've told you that. I really want to champion this project. It's not just the fact that we did it as a collective. The whole idea is like we need to prove this can be done, and it can be done.
Honestly, off the back of that project, we've then done CAMS, and now I'm seeing a huge opportunity. We've got two projects at the moment, which we're working with Cam and Erin, doing almost identical to what you guys have done.
It's like your hempcrete house. You've got to push boundaries in what is possible in this industry, and that was something that it's not pushing boundaries with an unlimited budget. It was pushing boundaries on a house. It is a common Australian house. Yep. It is leaky, uncomfortable, unhealthy, moldy.
And then it doesn't have to be that way, and it doesn't have to be an exorbitant amount of money.
No, and it works. Yep. And it's proven because I have a client sitting
here.
And
on the other end, it literally has reduced 99% of my utilities cost. Wow. No joke.
Wow.
I think I told you this last week.
Yeah, I think
So first month of winter, my June's electricity bill was $13.
Have you got solar?
Yeah.
And that's including paying your feeding tariffs in the worst month of the year for solar gain.
So no gas. Yeah. My electricity bill was $13.
Let's leave it there.
Wow. Let's leave it
Sarah,
there.
Sarah, thank you very much. No thank worries. You for being one. Awesome with my loan. Awesome clients.
I can't wait for you to be awesome with my home loan as well.
Yeah. So, she gets you like 1%. It's about 1% she gets it down to.
1%? Yeah. Right. Awesome. Yeah. Does she chip in the rest?
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
The bank is Sarah and Shane.
Yeah. Crowdfunded.
Thank you, Vera. And to get onto Sarah, best ways, how do we get onto you? You can either reach out to us, we can pass you on, or?
Yes. I've got a mobile email address, my website, which is www.beyond-financial.com.au. beyond-financial.com.au. There's a contact page on there.
Sarah's on TikTok too. No, she's not. Oh my God. She's doing like mortgage broker dancing.
The
TikTok broker.
Social is not good. I respond straight away all the time.
And she does. And I mean,
even during contractions.
I respond during my contractions. But yeah, we'll put it all the links in the show notes. If anyone wants to get onto Sarah, reach out to me through my social media because we've got her details we can pass on really easily. You can call her all times of the night because she answers.
Yeah,
thanks, Sarah.
Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.